accession number 28936, reel 3.
Sky Wilkeson, reel 3. What was the next move after you'd been the victorious had been the USS Robin? Where did you head to next with the squadron?
Well, then we came back to the UK, and the squadrons were flown ashore to Eglinton, Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Were you still equipped again, still with the martlets at that stage?
Yeah, then we changed martlets as we clapped out. We re-equipped with martlets. But we were very short of spares. I used to take on dark, rainy nights, we were short of wheels and things like that, or tail skids. I used to take a couple of the yaks out and rob them off another squadron.
So what were you doing at Eglinton? Was that just a place, were you based, or were you working up on the new martlets? What was the thing you were doing?
Well, I suppose relaxing for a month, something like that. Then we went on leave, of course. Did a lot of flying again. Cross-country stuff. I don't know how long we were there for, not that long. Then we joined a ship called Pursuer.
And what was she? What type of carrier
she was she? What I call a banana boat. It was one of those Henry K. Kaiser hulls, you know, a C3 hull, just a deck on her. Pretty slow, supposedly capable of 17 knots, but she was all metal deck. Metal cupboards, all the fittings, chairs, everything was metal, yeah.
And was it just large enough to take your one squadron, or did it have another squadron on?
Well, by that, we used to, 896 started off with 6 aircraft. Then in the Victorious, we were enlarged to 12. And for sure, we had 12 aircraft, and there was another squadron aboard, 881, with 12 aircraft. And then later on, we were absorbed by the Scenic 881, and we became a 24 aircraft squadron. And that's what she carried, the 24 fighters.
So what was the first operations you were involved in when you joined Pursuit?
Probably a convoy. Shortly afterwards, the Tirpitz, Operation Tungsten.
Could I just ask before that, were you convoy protection at that stage then, when you did your convoys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Convoy mustered at Gerlock on this, before the Tirpitz operation. It was the biggest Russian convoy of the war. And then we must have split off somewhere on Cape of North Hope or something, and we did the Tirpitz operation.
What did that entail? Can you give me as much detail as you can? Because obviously the Tirpitz is quite an important operation.
Well, the fighters, Searcher, Trumpeter and Pursuer, who were a group of small carriers, they had to strafe the Tirpitz to get rid of the bloody ACAC, light ATAC, and also any gun positions. And then the Barracudas came, and it was a success, but it could have been much better, because I was on the second strike, and by the time I got there, you couldn't see the ship because of all the smoke running.
What did you do? What was your approach to it? Because obviously she was in a fjord, wasn't she?
So yeah.
What type of approach did you have to make towards where the ship was?
Well, we struck the dive bombing approach, I think. Can't really remember much about it. It was all smoke and tearing about. And I went, my CO disappeared. He came back with a canvas over his gun port. I don't know what happened to him. The second strike was a bit of a shambles. You know. Well, first wasn't it. Baker Faulkner made a great mistake. He dropped the bombs from too low. And then some of the Barra boys thought that our tracer, which was bouncing off the turrets of Tirpitz, was actually AK-AK coming out of them. But they're good. I think they got 11 hits, put her out of action for a bit.
Did you fire where you approximately thought she was through the smoke then? Or were you looking?
Well, I think I could just see the stern. But what had the planners, because nobody, half the staff, naval staff, were lunatics, and indeed most of the officers, and the other half were witless. But had they had any bloody sense, the first target should have been the smoke generators. But they were never even mentioned. And it wouldn't have been difficult to put them out. Just a few squirts would do it.
And what was it? Was it a confusing... You said it was confusing. Was the smoke and were there aircraft wielding all over the place in the sky at that point as you came in, or was it...?
No, I think we were fairly well controlled from that point of view. We had a... Somebody had to go in first and somebody second, but I'm not sure the second... A lot of barracudas had a target to fire at. But you can see what one that just a flip, and it's all you need. There's an Amalov lorry blowing up. None of this scattered stuff. We could have put out those smoke generators so easily.
So the Tirpitz was hit anyway, though, in that period, was it, for a period of time?
She was hit by 11 bombs, but she'd only just recovered from the midget submarine attacks. And it was rather sad because one bomb, which plunged down into her guts, didn't explode. And it was found to contain half of it was explosive with sand. Just to show what these... It's unbelievable.
So after the Tirpitz raid, were you involved in other convoy escort duties for a while?
Yeah, we had... After the Tirpitz raid, we had several... I think we had several raids up there, Lingbaugh and Bodo and several strikes. And then we went down and took a convoy to Gibraltar, where we were in night action. The first time a carrier had ever been night, I told you about it.
Well, can you tell me again on this one, a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. Well, we got notice or warning that X number of aeroplanes had taken off and were heading with the convoy. And I think it was an RAF Sunderland had seen them or something and were heading in our direction. And it was dusk, and the captain had the option of doing nothing or of sending chaps aloft. And he sent four off on off the catapult. And they hacked down three or four German bombers and so forth. It was quite an extraordinary operation, because I stood on the deck to start with giving passage to a General Weston, a very pugnacious Marine who, had he not been relieved of his command at Crete, we would never have lost Crete. However, we stood there and all this, and see these aircraft playing up and so And all these ships in the convoy, of course, firing tracer across, crisscross. And I thought it was a bit bloody dicey, because these merchant guns. And Weston turned round to me and he said, "You know, these days I regard a battle as a positively boring affair." And then I went down in the hangar to boost the morale of the Irks. And it was terrible. It was like being in a tin can, being hammered. This was the only time we ever fired our 4-inch guns, and we had every other gun blazing. I mean, even the commander flying, a fool called Oliphant, he shot down the signal hand, halyards with some sort of submachine gun. And a dear commander, Commander Agatha, and he came up to me and he said, "I think you should get them to lie down." This is because of the partitions with the shards of metal. We hadn't got partitions, so anyway, I got them to lie down. And then he said to me, "Well, I don't know about you, Wilkinson, but I've shat myself."
But a successful operation there at that stage.
Very. It was the first time ever. It was very, very successful. And of course we had a job getting him back. One of them, a chap called Hank Wilson, disappeared off the screen. He was beyond radio range. And he somehow or other got in a spin, and his altimeter couldn't have been right because he recovered 20 feet below sea level. So one of the other aircraft relayed to him, got in touch with him. And by then, these three of them had come down, and Hank went on his way back, and we were in the wardroom having a jar, and we had this bump of him landing on the deck. And then he came in a few minutes later, absolutely furious, telling whoever those were responsible to return his clean shirts and a razor and everything else which had been filched from his cabin. Which is a custom, you know. And then we were fated by the merchant navy skippers, but couldn't take advantage of it. Then back to the UK. What was next? I don't know.
Was it the Aegean? Did you go into the
Aegean? Yeah, it was later. Yeah. We went to... Before the Aegean, we did... Gave El Patrol to... Do you remember Michael Walker? The great submarine...
Captain Frederick Johnny Walker.
Yeah. Well, he had, I think, seven escort groups out there stopping the U-boats coming through. So we gave him air cover. Not that he needed it. We only one 88 appeared, and we shot that down the first morning. And there was another ship, I think it was a Tracker out there, and she was rammed by the Canadian destroyer of the Team. She disappeared. And there was a lot of noise in the middle of the night and steam and hissing and things. But it was very noisy because Walker couldn't afford to take risks. And I suppose the happy shells of mackerel and anything else has all got depth charge. And he, of course, died on the bridge. He was on the bridge for four or five days. Never got off his British chair.
At that stage, then, was there not really the need for air cover at that point? Did it really? It was a
well, we don't know. We were... I see, we were in the Channel. And there was not any air cover, of course, because there was these German E-boats down at wherever they were down there, Cherbourg or something, who put in an appearance, but they shut off. Now, thence we went to South of France invasion.
So this is about August 1944?
Yeah. And that was lovely. Beautiful weather, nice ripple on the water, flying. And my CO was a non-flying CO, so by then I was an unofficial CO operation. And we used to take off and search for the enemy. And that was extremely successful, because General Patch, the American, said it would take 6 months for them to get to Lyon. And in actual fact, his lot had linked up with Patton's troops in 3 weeks. But the Huns decided not to contest it. They fought for Marseille and Toulon, which the Free French took. American casualties were less than 100, and most of those were sort of athlete's foot and clap and things like that.
Accidents.
But we chased these Huns up all the way up the main roads, destroying countless vehicles.
How would you make an attack on vehicles? What kind of approach would you make?
It depends entirely whether, I mean, if they were in a, we carried bombs at that time, by then, which we practiced dive bombing on Pantelleria of, no, not Pantelleria, some place off Malta. If they were congregated inside a castle courtyard, of course you had to make a steep attack, but if you only had to give them one burp on the petrol tank and the thing exploded, so it was better off doing it astern. Depended naturally on this and that.
Was there much threat from anti-aircraft fire at this stage?
Well, I say that, but my number three was perforated on at least six operations running. We got to, yes, we. The half of the squadron, instead of course, were spotting for the battleships. I want to show you one thing here. For repairs, I hadn't got. I think I had one aircraft serviceable at the end of a week.
Why was that? Was it just the?
Oh, ACAC.
It was all. Was it all light attack you were facing really from at that?
Well,
stage?
Yes, and there were a lot of medium stuff. The German 88 probably did more damage than anything else. But we tried to fly at the. I think it was about 6,000 feet, which was between one or the other. There. You can see it. That's the bomber flight.
Oh, with the damage that had occurred to each aircraft?
Yeah. You see, there's only one serviceable aircraft.
And that was all through anti-aircraft fire?
Yeah. And I'd borrowed four of these from AFLAC. We had several people shot down, all except one were okay. But there you were asking about Fleck, there it is. Out of 12 aircraft plus, only one serviceable.
Were there any casualties at all during this period to the squadron?
What do you call casualties?
I mean losses, people killed.
Yeah, one was killed. He was a useless chap. He was a petty officer, Banks, who had a habit of turning away when things got tight. And nobody ever knew what. He disappeared, nobody ever knew how. But it wouldn't have surprised me if his section leader hadn't had something to do with it. Yeah. You can't do with people like that. The others. No, out of the people who were shot down, there were no casualties. We got them all back.
And what was the next move after the South of France, though, with it being so successful? What was the... You weren't in for repairs, or...?
No, I think we went down to Alex. and then on to the adjourn.
And what did that involve? Were you in the gym? What were you? What type of attacks were you making there?
Well, it was just much the same, except a lot of it was kikes. And we're trying to stop the Germans getting back to the mainland. So anything that moved was free game, so to speak. Kikes and a lot of road transport in places like Crete and shipping at Rhodes.
Well, most of the transport at that time, would it have been just German transport on the roads?
Oh, yeah, they couldn't. Oh, on the roads, yeah. Oh, nothing but. The only case I remember of Allied transport was up in the Pyrenees somewhere, and there was a car moving down through the trees, and I switched off all my guns at one and gave it a burst, and it just shot off the road into his radiator. And that must have been a Mackie or something, because he got out of his car and shook his fist at us. And I called out to the others not to fire. Brave man. Yeah.
But in the Aegean, it was likely to be just German transport, was it, moving around that you were?
Oh, yeah, it was all the, because there was only one road on those sort of places, like Crete.
Were targets easy to find?
If you were like, yeah, if you went to somewhere like Iraq, and yes, there were big flying boats in the harbour and boats and so forth. And it was rather sad for the locals, because they couldn't sail between islands without a German licence. And at night, we had a sort of sheepdog called Wheatland, a destroyer with a crumpled bar. She used to go off and pick up these things, and the only cargo really was wine. And her doctor, he was always the first on board, and he tasted a few of them. And then the poor sods, they had to sink these ships, take off the blubbing Greeks and so on. But we were never short of wine.
What was the state of the German forces really in that area at that time? Were they?
Well, we didn't come into contact with them, not in the Navy. I wouldn't have thought they were very happy.
What was the next move after the Aegean? Where did you go to after that?
I went then back up Norway.
What did that involve, the latter half of the war? What were you doing there?
Anti-shipping strikes.
How did that differ from what you've been doing?
Not really, except for the weather. The weather was abysmal. Cold, wet. And of course all the iron ore from Sweden came down, and it was Norwegian leads. We had some very successful strikes there.
You mentioned in your notes to me that you did skip bombing.
Oh yeah, then we started off this bloody skip bombing.
What did that entail?
Well, he was flying along and dropping a bomb, said it went through the hull of a ship. It was utterly useless, in my opinion. Of course, you either had to have a 2 or a 18 or a 13 seconds delay on the bomb. And these bombs, I remember one thing we attacked, the bombs went straight through her, in one side and out the other. And of course, by the time 13 seconds was out, because we weren't going to bother about the 2 second jobs, that would have meant the fellow behind was in trouble. No, that was another Admiralty aberration.
What kind of approach would you make with this skip bombing?
Horizontal, sea level. We were far better off fitted with rockets.
What were you flying at that time? Was it still the Martlets?
Yeah, still Martlets.
And when you made these attacks, were the ships heavily protected?
Oh yeah, they had these spear breakers, the flagships. They had platforms right up the mast. And that was when, if the Barracudas were attacking a convoy, we'd go in and take care of the AK-AK first. Sort out that. Because the Barracuda was a terrible aeroplane. Awful.
When you were suppressing these flagships, what would you be doing? Would you be just literally just coming in at low level and attacking them?
Yeah, that's right. You look out and see if the gun flashes. That gives you your target. And then put your sights on them and give them a squirt. Then come around again and do it on something else.
Would you approach from a different angle coming back the second time? Or would you approach from the same angle again? Or?
It was usually the same angle again. We didn't like crisscrossing. But if there was a convoy, say, of six ships, very often a different angle.
How did you feel about making that type of an attack? What does it feel like to be a pilot to do that sort of
thing? Oh, great fun.
Is it exhilarating?
I don't think I was... One of the things was I'd forgotten so much because it was very tiring. The weather was appalling. And we had several people shot down. We were losing, weather-wise, something like 5% of the squadron the whole time with deck landings. The junior chaps come along and that'd be that. And it was miserable time. We didn't think we were achieving anything. But I took a lot of benzodiazepine to keep me awake. And that affected my memory. I'd come back from an operation and not remember where I'd been. And have to rely on somebody else to tell me. Yeah. I don't think I was ever exhilarated. I was sometimes when Tracer passed between you and the stub of your wing, might have been paralyzed for a second or two, and I can't remember being exhilarated. But at least it was better than doing bugger all, because the worst in naval flying was most fighter pilots never did a bloody thing except go back up and down from a deck.
And were you doing that until January 45 when you joined the carrier trials unit?
Yeah.
What did that entail, joining that? What were you doing there?
Well, we tested all the aircraft. There were four of us to start with, and I had the American fighters. Another chap had British fighters, and then there was American TBR and British TBR. And then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. We did all sorts of trials, crosswind trials, night flying trials.
Did you fly most of the American types then that were...?
No, within 3 months of me joining there, we enlarged and we got about every aircraft we could get. I flew the Hellcat on practically every trial, deck trial. That was a nice aircraft.
You say nice, what do you mean by nice? Was it?
Well, it was much bigger. It had a hydraulic undercarriage. See, one thing about the Martinet was you never had problems with hydraulic. You had to wind this bloody handle 39 times to get the undercarriage. But some of the Hellcat boys had got shot up because they couldn't use their undercarriage. To bail out and so forth. But then we had all sorts of things, seafires and this and that to play with.